And it is good to be together. Just a little bit of a heads up that we are heading to the Easter here in about 3 weeks. Next Sunday, Dan Kamek is going to come and share with us. And I think he told me he didn't quite have it all worked out, but it would include Jesus. So I think we're good there. So Dan will be sharing with us next week, and then the following Sunday will be Palm Sunday, and then Easter Sunday. And so today, let me invite you this morning to turn to Numbers, the book of Numbers, Sefer Bamidbar. Again, working our way through the Jesus backstory, the backstory that is the Torah, Jesus being the fulfillment of the Torah, right? Jesus even says, Matthew 5:17, Do not think I have come to abolish Torah. I have not come to abolish, he says, but to fulfill. Jesus, the fulfillment of the Torah. And so we are working our way through that backstory, the Jesus backstory. And today we come to Parsha Matot, Numbers 30 and verse 1, and runs through the end of 32. It's the 42nd of the 54. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible, 119 will be helpful. The words will be on the screen behind me. Numbers chapter 30, verse 1. Picking it up here, it says, we read, Vayedaber Moshe el Rashi Hamatot. Hamatot means the tribes. It's the name of our Parsha. So Vayedaber Moshe el Rashi Hamatot Livnei Yisrael Emor. And said Moses, right, to the heads of the tribes of the children of Israel, Zeh Hadavar Asher Tziva Adonai, saying, this is what the Lord commands. This is what the Lord Yahweh commands. And then straight off, we hit verse 2. Verse 2 reads, when a man makes a vow to the Lord or takes an oath to obligate himself by a pledge, he must not break his word, but must do everything he said. Which is interesting considering the context. Noting that most recently the Torah has been describing what is kind of the final stages of the Israelites' journey to the Promised Land. And so sort of unexpectedly here, in steps Parsha Matot, right? Parsha Matot, it steps in, begins, right? And we read vows about vows and oaths, but unexpected or not, it is the placement of vows and oaths right into the midst of the narrative that is our reminder, as the rabbis tell us, our reminder of the importance of keeping our word. The importance. Whatever is going on in life, whatever the stuff of life, whatever we could say the narrative of life for you and me, Parsha Matot steps into that and reminds us of the importance of keeping our word, being a people who keep our word. We see an example of this from the Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. He notes one instance of how this plays out in real life appears later in Parsha Matot. Two of the tribes, Reuben and Gad, decide they would rather live to the east of the Jordan, where the land is more suitable for their livestock. After a fraught conversation with Moses, who accuses them of shirking their responsibilities to the rest of the people, they agree to be on the front lines of the army until the conquest of the land is complete. Everything depends on their keeping their word. We might even say today, everything depends on us keeping our word. And it's that perspective that Jesus then picks up on. We read of it in Matthew chapter 5. So I want to go there for a bit this morning. If you're grabbing a Pew Bible, 684. Again, the words are on the screen behind me. This is recorded in the Gospel of Matthew 5, picks up at verse 33, and is a reference, actually, to the very text of Parsha Matot. Noting it's interesting, it also follows on the heels of our reading from last week. It's almost like Jesus and Matthew knew something about the Torah and the Parshiot, if we can imagine that. Matthew 5:33, Jesus is speaking here. It says, we read, again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Now again, here Jesus, he is referencing Parsha Matot. It says to the people of long ago, keeping in mind, in addition to the Torah and the Parshiot, which are considered to be the written law, there is also what is known as the oral law. In Jewish tradition, the oral law travels all the way back actually to Mount Sinai, Moses on Mount Sinai. Jewish tradition says that he even received the oral law. It wasn't until after the time of Jesus that the oral law was compiled into a written form called the Mishnah. It's part of the Talmud. And in the Mishnah, there are two sections there. One is called Nedarim, from Neder, which means vow or vows. The other is Shevuot, which translates as oaths. Point being that in both the written text, in the written law, and in the oral law, all throughout, right, we read of vows and oaths, essentially reminding us that both are considered to be serious matters. Keeping in mind also, it was a common practice in the ancient world, right, to invoke the name of God as a witness to one's promise. And so here, Jesus, with all of that kind of, not just in the background, but really front and center of daily life, here comes Jesus calling to mind, and he begins here, you have heard, right? Meaning this is not something that they did not know about, right? They knew of this, right? Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. And I don't know, we can imagine, I think about these things, we can imagine they're all kind of nodding their heads in agreement. Yeah, Jesus, we're with you. And then he says, but I tell you, do not swear an oath, which maybe it doesn't need to be said, but swearing here, it's not the kind of swearing that we often think of in terms of, you know, shouting expletives or profanity or curses, right? But meaning do not swear an oath. Do not make a solemn promise, right? Invoking God as your witness. Do not make a solemn promise, invoking the name of God. And then we read at all. Do not swear an oath at all. Not in the slightest degree. It means not in any respect. Do not swear an oath at all. Simply put, we could say whatever the narrative of life, right? He says, be the kind of person, be the kind of people who keep your word. Now with that, there were a couple of situations, circumstances in the ancient world. One of them, William Barclay describes as frivolous swearing. It's making an oath where none is needed. It was common in the ancient world, just kind of throughout daily life. Even in the most routine and ordinary and mundane sorts of exchanges to swear an oath, to invoke the name of God. So there was this frivolous swearing. Second, there was another that Barclay refers to as evasive swearing. And it's important to note that to the Jew, a vow that invoked the name of God was absolutely binding. The idea behind this, notes Barclay, was that if God's name was used, God became a partner in the transaction. Whereas if God's name was not used, God had nothing to do with the matter. And so this kind of practice developed, right? This idea of, well, what if I swear, but I don't actually use God's name? What if I swear, but maybe I say heaven, right? And so I will swear by heaven, or maybe earth. I swear by earth, or maybe my head. And so I swear on my life, right? And it's to that Jesus then goes on. He says, "Do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. In effect, writes Barclay, Jesus is saying that far from having to make God a partner in any transaction, no one can keep God out of any transaction. God is already there. From the scholar Leon Morris, people would sometimes swear by heaven or earth or a similar oath and later claim they were not bound by that oath because God was not mentioned. Right, kind of like promising something with your fingers crossed behind your back when you were a little kid. And here, Jesus, again, he weighs in, right? And he says, do not swear an oath at all. And this whole by heaven or by earth or by your on your own life, right? We can't divide life in that way. Our lives should not be divided in that way. 37, all you need to say is simply yes or no. Right? All you need to do is simply say yes or no. In other words, be the kind of person who keeps your word. Right? In any and every situation, circumstance, anything Jesus says beyond this, meaning the use of a vow, right, to deceive someone when you have no intent of keeping the promise anyway, right? He says anything beyond this, the deceitful swearing of oaths, comes from the evil one. Right? So it's simply yes or no. In effect, he says, be the kind of person that keeps your word. Be the kind of person that does life in such a way that it makes the swearing of an oath completely unnecessary. We could say be the kind of person as the Greek orator Isocrates describes it, a person leading that kind of life which will gain more confidence than an oath ever can do. We can think here about the Essenes, an ancient Jewish group. Josephus, the historian, he writes, they are eminent for fidelity and are ministers of peace. Also, whatsoever they say is firmer than an oath. Swearing is avoided by them, and they esteem it worse than perjury. For they say that he who cannot be believed without swearing, right, without saying an oath, without invoking, right, is already condemned. We can think, too, of the... You may have heard of the Society of Friends, right? The Quakers. You might be familiar a little bit with the Quakers. Very similar mindset to the Essenes. Perhaps most notably in their refusing to swear an oath when testifying in court. Believing, as the writer and author Catherine Steiner puts it, believing that swearing oaths created a double standard of truthfulness. If you need to swear an oath to guarantee you are telling the truth, then you can't really believe you must tell the truth the rest of the time. It's interesting, it was in fact the Quakers that led to the Quakers Act of 1695, or what is also known as or called an act that the solemn affirmation and declaration of the people called Quakers shall be accepted instead of an oath in the usual form. This was over in England. The fullness of it says, any person who objects to being sworn shall be permitted to make his solemn affirmation instead of taking an oath. It's interesting, down to our own Constitution, which mentions affirmation, I believe, at least four different times. In fact, the President of the United States, when being inaugurated, can choose to either swear or to affirm. And just for trivia's sake, maybe, there is one president in our history that has affirmed. Any ideas who that is? What's that? Yeah, we would think Nixon, wouldn't we? Franklin Pierce. 14th President Franklin Pierce. Although we're really not totally sure why he chose to affirm, especially when you kind of look at other aspects of his life, maybe, but... That's not for me to judge. And here's Jesus. Jesus says, all you need is simply to say yes or no. Right? In essence, leading a life which will gain more confidence than ever an oath can do. I think the scholar Barclay, I think he sums it up well, and we'll leave some time for open worship. I'll throw out a few questions. Barclay says, life cannot be divided into compartments, in some of which God is involved and in others of which he is not involved. There cannot be one kind of language in the church and another kind in the shipyard or the factory or the office. There cannot be one kind of standard of conduct in the church and another kind of standard in the business world. The fact is that God does not need to be invited into certain departments of life and kept out of others. He is everywhere, all through life, and every activity of life. He hears not only the words which are spoken in his name, he hears all words, and there cannot be any such thing as a form of words which evades bringing God into a transaction. We will regard all promises as sacred if we remember that all promises are made in the presence of God, just as all places are in the presence of God. And therefore, an oath in the name of God is unnecessary, for God is there anyway. Right? All you need to say is simply yes or no. And so the question becomes, am I doing life that way? Am I doing life? We could ask, am I a person who keeps my word? Am I doing life bound to every word I speak? Am I a person who keeps my word? Am I doing life bound to every word I speak? We could borrow from Rabbi Sacks here and ask, do I live as though everything depends on keeping my word? Do I live as though everything depends on me keeping my word? We could think of the earliest of the Quakers and ask, does my life affirm the truthfulness of my words? Does my life affirm the truthfulness of my words? Do I live integrated in both what I speak and what I do? Do I live an integrated life in both word and deed? We can borrow from William Barclay here and ask, do I live with God as a partner in every transaction? Right, again, an integrated life. Do I live with God as a partner in every transaction? Do I regard all my promises as made in the presence of God? Right, all you need to say is simply yes or no. And said Moses to the head of the tribes of the Israelites, Zeh Hadavar Asher Tzivah Adonai, this is what Yahweh the Lord commands. Mm-hmm.